Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In all likelihood, your property taxes are about to rise. The state mandates property revaluation every 7 years, and we just went through the process. To no one's surprise, property values, residential and commercial, in Mecklenburg County have appreciated. In some cases, substantially. Both the city and the county collect taxes based on those values. The city's new $2.6 billion budget, which we talked about with Mayor Vi Lyles and City Manager Marcus Jones last week, keeps their new tax rate revenue neutral. They tried to keep the taxes you pay to the city the same as before, even as the value of your property may have risen and as they increase expenditures. Mecklenburg County has a different story to tell. Their budget for the next fiscal year calls for taxes to rise on 65% of residential property. Taxes on 70% of commercial property will also increase. The median increase on residential property is about 43%, on commercial property, 77%. So since the county could not keep a lid on raising taxes, how are they planning to use that money? A closer look at their proposed budget will tell that story, so we invited Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiIorio to take us through this $1.9 billion budget, along with the county's Management and Budget Director Michael Bryant. Welcome back to you both. Good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Nice to be here.
You can join us on at Charlotte Talks at WFAE.org. Search for us on Facebook. Get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. You can also watch us this morning on Facebook Live. Let me start with you, Dina. I'm going to start with the same question I asked of the mayor and Marcus Jones, the city's budget director. What is the process for coming up with this budget every year?
So we have a number of processes that we go through. We look at what our departments give us in terms of what they say that their needs are, because we have a number of lines of businesses that we run. So we look at what those needs are. We also look at what we hear from the community. We did a number of community engagement initiatives this year that we had not done before. We held a budget public hearing before we started the budget process, as well as an online survey, so we could hear from the community.
What did you learn from that?
Well, we learned primarily is that the biggest request or the biggest priority of the community was around education. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we heard a lot about education. We heard a lot about parks and greenways, a lot about early childhood education as well. Those were the priorities that we heard from the community. And then at the board's retreat in January, they gave us their priorities of things that were important to them. And so we factored in all of those priorities as well when we put together this budget.
Who has the big hammer? Is it the citizens or is it the county commission? Or is it the needs of the departments, because they know what they're doing? I mean, they're in the trenches every day.
Well, you try to strike a balance, right? I mean, you have to make sure that you provide what the departments need to be able to provide services, but also reflect the needs and the priorities and the wishes and the desires of the community as well as the Board of County Commissioners. So we try to strike a balance.
So this year's budget, Michael, is $1.9 billion. How does that compare to last fiscal year's budget?
Last year's budget overall, the total funding was $1.7 billion for fiscal year 2019. You're looking at total revenue increasing by about $158 million based on what the county manager is recommending for fiscal year 20.
Which is about 9%.
It's about a 9% increase.
And according to the county, it rolls back, let's be clear about this, it rolls back the tax rate 25% from 82.32 cents to 61.69 cents per $100 of assessed value. And yet, most people's property taxes from Mecklenburg County will rise. Why?
That's correct. And keep in mind that as a result of the revaluation, that some residents will see a property tax rate increase even at the revenue neutral property tax rate. Based on what the county manager is recommending for next fiscal year, actually there will be about 34% residents that will see a property rate tax decrease. And based on a home valued at $250,000, in 2019, and if it experienced about a 40% increase in its valuation, those residents will see about a $9 per month property tax rate increase in their bills.
Okay. So the property tax rate is 61. This is it's hard to talk about these numbers on the radio. We need charts and graphs. 61.69 cents per $100 of assessed value. So you can do the math at home on the home version of this. That's 25% less than the current rate of 1.99. $0.09 above what it would be if you were to be revenue neutral, meaning you'd be taking in the same amount of money even though property values had risen. How much more revenue will that generate?
The recommended tax rate increase of 1.99 cents will generate about an additional $36 million. The value of a one penny is increasing from $12.5 million to about $18 million next fiscal year.
So everybody in the county knew that this was a property revaluation year, and we know that the debacle we went through 7 years ago when this happened, and I don't think anybody is around that was part of that scheme or part of that plan, but it didn't go well. This year it seems to have gone much better, but you knew that values were going to go up with this reassessment. How big a consideration was that for you as you put together your numbers and tried to come up with the final budget?
Well, it was absolutely a consideration because, as Michael said, you know, at a revenue neutral rate, 56% of people's tax bills were going to go up.
Right.
So we knew that there was going to be a tax implication, which is why when we put the budget together, we were very conscious of making sure that whatever tax rate increase we proposed would be as small as possible, but still be able to accomplish the things that we wanted to accomplish in this budget. The other thing I just want to add is that people who own vehicles will see their vehicle taxes drop because the tax rate's dropping. So when you look at your vehicle tax along with your property tax, there'll be a net effect of those two things. So your overall tax burden will not be as high as people may think.
Why is the vehicle tax dropping?
Because it's the same tax rate that's applied to your vehicles that's applied to your property. So the 6169 will be applied to the value of your vehicle just like it'll be applied to your house.
So the tax on my yacht is going down too?
Exactly. Okay. There you go.
That's right.
Everyone's a winner.
That's right. When we talked to the city about their keeping their tax rate relatively revenue neutral, they did that, they said, because they have this goal, overall city goal, to be aware of maintaining and increasing the stock of affordable housing. And if you raise property taxes, your house becomes more expensive to own and therefore less affordable. Do you have similar priorities or do you have different priorities with regard to what the county? Because you have different services that you provide.
We do, and affordable housing is a priority of the Board of County Commissioners.
Okay.
But we also have other priorities. So, for example, education is a priority. And so when you look at this budget and the property tax growth that we generated before a property tax increase was $63 million. $50 million of that went to CMS. We also appropriated an additional $21 million for early childhood education. Mm-hmm. So that's $71 million right there. So in order for us to be able to provide adequate funding for education, which is a priority for our board as well as our community, we could not do it with the revenue that we had. And those are very important items.
The city is only a part of the county. It's most of it, but it's only a part of the county. And their budget is $2.6 billion, and yours is $1.9. Why is the county's budget smaller?
So the county's budget's smaller because they have, they have the airport, they have CATS.
City has it.
They do. And so those are very expensive operations. They have Charlotte Water. And so those are very...
Can you count Charlotte Water? Because they have their own fee structure above and beyond taxes.
But so is the same for the airport as well. So that's an enterprise fund as well as CATS is an enterprise fund.
But see, the airport, I'm told, pays for itself, right?
It does, but it's all part of the same. When you look at the $2.7 billion or $2.6 billion, it includes the airport. Even though it's self-sustaining and has its own revenue stream, it is part of that. Their general fund actually considerably smaller than our general fund.
Correct.
So our general fund is
$1.6 billion, and their general fund, I believe, is a little less than $1 billion.
So that may answer my next question, which is they were able to keep their tax rate revenue neutral, and you were not. Why?
Because we made significant investments in things that require property taxes to be able to do that. Education is the prime example. We have to use property tax for education, where the other things that they have in their budget, they have other fees that they can use to pay for those things. So we have just different services that we have to provide with the revenue that we have.
When Harry Jones was sitting in your office, Dina,
yes,
he used to come on this program and he would say, taxes equal services. If you want this, then you got to pay that. And usually when he was here, this is a long time ago, I don't know how many years ago, 10 years ago maybe, we were just beginning to feel the incredible growth that this community was going through. And he would always say that the benefits of growth lag. In other words, people move in, we have to supply infrastructure that costs money. That money is recouped later on down the road in a higher tax base, but it takes a while for the two to equal out. I was surprised last week when Marcus Jones was on here, and I asked how they were able to keep their tax rate revenue neutral, and he said because of growth, because more people are moving here, that adds to the tax base. So explain this to me. I have two different theories at operation here.
Well, I think they're both right. I think it just, you know, the services that we provide are different. So we have to provide, you know, parks, that kind of infrastructure. We also have to be able to provide funding for education. We have to, you know, provide for schools. And we still have overcrowding in a lot of our schools, and we're still in a catch-up mode there. So I think it's just a different set of services that we provide in terms of how we have to pay for those. Do you have a...
Yeah, what I would add is the tax base is forecast to grow by 43% based on a revaluation. That's comparing the 2009 values to the 2019 values. So that's significant. To put that in perspective, the 19 budget property tax value grew for about 2 or 3%.
We keep hearing this figure that about 100 people move here every day. Do you know where they're moving? Are they moving into apartments where they don't pay property taxes, or are they moving into single-family homes or condominiums or townhomes where they do pay property taxes?
All of the above, I would say.
All of the above, but even with apartment complexes, someone is paying the property taxes for those complexes.
They're going to pay the property tax whether the room is rented or not.
That's part of the monthly rent, I'm pretty sure.
You've said that there are these different constituencies that you have to consider when you're coming up with the budget every year, but you've said in part, I believe in print, you've said that the county had to raise taxes in order to meet the county commission's goals. This is the first commission in years that has been 100% made up of Democrats. No Republicans are on the county commission. How do their spending goals differ from previous commissions?
I think they're just more articulate about what their goals and their priorities are. At this retreat was the first time since I've been county manager that we actually did a very serious goal setting and priority setting exercise where they really did articulate specifically where they wanted to focus in this budget. And that was an opportunity for us to really get a feel for where the whole board was. Mm-hmm. Because we had four new members. We wanted to make sure that everybody had an opportunity to put their voice in the room and to really articulate what the priorities were and to build consensus around those priorities.
Should I be troubled that this is the first time since you've been county manager that the board articulated their goals?
No, I don't think so. I think because we had four new members,
okay,
and really trying to make sure that we had a good feel for where the whole board was collectively, mm-hmm, we went through a very intentional exercise around priority setting.
Yeah, that's correct.
So in reporting on this tax increase that the county is proposing, WFAE Steve Harrison described spending increases in the county under this budget as being significant. Would you say that's an accurate statement?
I would concur with that. Based on what is being recommended, an additional $62 million will be invested in the board's five top budget priorities for next fiscal year.
Okay. So significant is a good thing in this case?
I believe so. It's a great investment for the community who would benefit from these investments.
Yeah, I keep hearing the word investment being tossed around in these county budget discussions. That's what they are?
They're absolutely investments, and you know, and this board was very clear that they wanted to be bold. Okay. They wanted to be able to be bold, and they wanted to be able to make significant investments in these areas, and we were in a position to do that.
County Manager Dina DiOrio is with us, along with the Management and Budget Director from Mecklenburg County, Michael Bryant. We're talking about the budget. We'll get into the weeds of the budget and where that money is going in a few minutes at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the county budget with Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiOrio and Michael Bryant, who is the Management and Budget Director for the county. We talked last week with Mayor Lyles and with Marcus Jones, the city's budget director, about how they put together their budget. They were particularly worried about longtime homeowners, they said, in areas where property values they knew were going to increase significantly because of this recent revaluation, and those areas are the areas that seem to be prone to gentrification, like Cherry and Biddleville and Optimist Park, to name just a few. All of those neighborhoods are pretty much historically African-American neighborhoods. Even though new construction is coming in, there are still people who live there who really can't afford a substantial property tax increase. Was that part of your considerations as you looked at these things?
It absolutely was part of our consideration. And as we said earlier, at the revenue neutral rate, those folks are going to be significantly impacted by tax increases because mm-hmm. their values increase so significantly. But when you look at the very small tax increase that we put in our budget, the incremental add because of the tax increase is actually fairly small.
But is there any way around it? In other words, if you are a longtime resident of these neighborhoods on a limited and perhaps even a fixed limited income, and you just can't afford this, your property values are going up because of gentrification. You got $1 million home next door to your 900 square foot, 1500 square foot house that's been there since 1938. Can you go to the county? Can you go to the city and say, look, my property really isn't worth that and I can't afford it, and do something about it?
Well, I mean, people should, if they felt like their value was incorrect, they should have absolutely filed an appeal. Mm-hmm. And I think the deadline to file an appeal is Monday. Yeah. So if people still feel like they need to have somebody take a look at their value, they should absolutely do that.
How many people actually do that?
Oh, we've had...
number can't provide it.
Yeah, I don't have the number with me, but we have had people who have appealed. And
are they successful? Because the
in
dirt,
some cases they are, yeah.
The price of the dirt undoubtedly has gone up in some of these places, but the price of the value of the structure sitting on that land has not increased. And you're talking about low income people or fixed income people who really, really can't afford. They're not to blame for the guy next door building $1 million house and raising the property values in the neighborhood.
No, they're not to blame. But that's, I mean, revaluation basically is an indicator of what's already happened in the market. We don't control property values. Property values are driven by the market, and all we're doing in a revaluation is just basically reporting out what the market's telling us is already happening. So we can't really do anything about that. But there are a number of tax relief programs mm-hmm. that we run through the assessor's office that people who aren't fixed incomes really should get in touch with the assessor's office and should really see if they qualify for that, because that will help them in this situation.
Are they difficult hoops to jump through for people?
If you meet the income threshold, they are not. One of the things we're also doing is we are working or trying to work with the General Assembly to see if we can't get the income thresholds increased so that more people will be able to qualify for those programs that are currently able to qualify.
Something else that we're looking at is also changing the reval cycle to a four-year cycle.
Yes.
So that there will not be as of a significant swing between property values, with a long-term goal of having a two-year reval cycle.
Yeah, 7 years in a city like Charlotte is a dramatic increase in values usually. The city and the county budget, they always come out about the same time, and the city's came out, I think, first, and then you came out, and they've held the line on... I could be wrong about that. Was I wrong about that?
No, we came out first.
Came out first.
Yes, we did.
All right, so when the city comes out second and they've been able to hold the line, does that, on property tax increases, does that put any pressure on you to rethink some of the things that you're planning for and maybe pull back on the increase in property taxes?
It does not, and in fact, you know, some of the feedback that we've gotten so far is that we have not been bold enough in this budget, that we really didn't do enough for park and recreation, that potentially we didn't do enough for CMS, and so we'll see what the Board of County Commissioners does with the budget now that it's in their hands, but we're not getting any feedback, negative feedback about the property tax rate, only about the fact that we didn't do enough in some areas.
Okay, the city says their property tax rate, which is 34.81 cents per $100 of value, is the lowest in 50 years. Where's the counties?
In terms of where does it rank?
Yeah.
I don't know off the top of my head, but I will say the first 3 or 4 years that Dina was manager, that she maintained a stable property tax rate increase. And then once the board articulated their priorities for next fiscal year and wanted bold investments in this budget, a property tax rate increase had to be considered.
Is it fair even to compare your budget with the city's?
Well, I think it's natural to try to compare them, and you know, we do talk. So we, you know, I think I knew where the city manager was going to land from a tax, tax rate perspective, and I sort of told him where I was thinking and where I was leaning. So, you know, it's natural to compare. I think people need to understand, though, as we've talked about other occasions, is that we provide very different services. So yeah, there is no overlap there.
Let's talk about that, because people don't know, particularly newcomers, don't know what the city provides in terms of services or what their tax dollars go to when the city spends them versus the county. So what do you guys do? What is the county responsible for?
Well, we're responsible for all services, like we say, that have to do with people. So we provide all the human services, so all the social services, child support enforcement. We deal with all the issues around homeless, domestic violence, veterans, parks and recreation,
jail and detention center.
And we also do all the land use, so air quality, water quality, code enforcement.
And the city does transportation, which means cats and links and roads and
streets.
Sewer
public
and
safety.
Water and solid waste removal.
Police and fire.
Okay.
Streets.
It seems to me that that stuff would cost a lot more than what you provide.
You know, you would think so, except that our services are very people intensive.
Okay.
And so we have in order to provide the services that we provide, it takes a lot of bodies. And those cost money, and we value our employees, and we make sure that we try to take care of them.
So when the mayor was on last week with Marcus Jones, the budget director for the city.
City manager.
Thank you for correcting me. I think I've said it about five times now. Feel free, anytime. One area that they talked about was affordable housing and funding more money for affordable housing, perhaps in another bond referendum, not unlike the one that voters said yes to back in November. Affordable housing isn't something the county traditionally focuses on, but you are proposing to spend $422.5 million. I think that's a $15.2 million increase from a year ago. What will that money do that can't be done by the city or by the $50 million bond referendum that voters said yes to in November?
So the Board of County Commissioners has been very vocal and very intentional about their wanting to participate in helping to address this issue of affordable housing. And so what we did is we looked at areas where we believe that we could add value and not duplicate what others were doing. And so we are proposing a new rental subsidy program, because we know the city is doing a lot of work around bricks and mortar and trying to build more units, and that's important. But in the meantime, we need to be able to try to provide subsidy to people who need that so they can afford to live in apartments that currently exist. We're also working with legal aid to expand services around eviction prevention. We know that when somebody goes into landlord-tenant court and they are assisted by an attorney, they have an over 80% success rate. As opposed to when they don't have an attorney. The results are much more grim. So wanting to make sure we participate in that. We're also working with Habitat for Humanity, $1 million for their critical home repair program. So those homes that you talked about in those gentrifying areas, to be able to do the necessary repairs so that people can stay in those homes, is a big program of theirs. We want to be able to support that. and also $1.3 million on a program called Keeping Families Together, which is a supportive services and housing program for families who are at risk of becoming in contact with the child welfare system and trying to keep kids out of foster care. So these are services that are related to housing, but they're also sort of in areas that we currently work.
We have a comment from somebody listening on Twitter. They're not listening to us on Twitter, but they're commenting on Twitter. Why is Mecklenburg County focused on non-core services such as affordable housing, which is a city priority, and pre-K, which is a state function, which we'll talk about a little bit in a second or two? What happens, since you're concentrating in these areas, what happens in the next downturn? Do essential services get cut to continue to fund these non-core programs?
So again, the Board of County Commissioners was very intentional about voicing their desire to participate in the affordable housing issue, and that was the direction that they gave to me, and so I try to provide some opportunities for them to be able to do that. In terms of early childhood education, that is one of the main determinants in the Economic Opportunity Task Force report, that we know that having children participate in early childhood education is a determinant of future success. And so we've taken that on as an issue because we are the only local funder of education in Mecklenburg County. And so there's money that comes through the state from the federal government. There's also money that comes through the state for the NC Pre-K program. Mm-hmm. But those programs are not adequate to be able to provide the level of service that we need in Mecklenburg County to be able to provide early childhood education experiences to the children that we have here in our county.
I think your proposed budget plans to fund the schools at $534 million.
It's an increase of $50
million. Is that your biggest chunk of money?
Yes.
Schools is the biggest
Absolutely.
Thing you fund. And you're as you just said, Michael, you're increasing funding for the schools by $50 million. That's a 10% or on average increase over last year. And it includes $8 million, a local supplement for teachers. What will that mean to the average teacher's paycheck?
I don't have the numbers for what that means for the actual paycheck. However, that $8 million will result in teachers in CMS district being the highest paid teachers in the state of North Carolina.
And what will that mean for CMS? What will that mean for Charlotte? What will that mean for education?
Well, hopefully it will assist them with recruiting and retaining the best educators in the state and the nation as well.
There was an article in the Observer, I think on Sunday, that said that teachers in Charlotte and Raleigh, despite what you just said, being the highest paid in the state, are struggling to pay for housing more than people in other professions with similar levels of education. And it also said that 22% of Charlotte teachers were cost burdened by housing, meaning that they spend more than 30% of their income on housing. Will these rising rates, what you're pumping into teacher salaries, help alleviate that?
I mean, I think it certainly will help. Now, will it solve the problem? I'm not sure I can say that. But we know that when we talk about affordable housing, part of that is workforce housing.
Right.
And teachers fall into that category of those not being able to find what we call workforce housing, which would allow them to not be cost burdened as it relates to housing.
You're also proposing salary increases for locally funded CMS employees, market adjustments of hourly staff. And I think that includes your staff, if I'm not mistaken.
That's for CMS staff.
Just for CMS, to $13.22 an hour. The city just raised their hourly employee rate from $15 to $16 per hour because that makes it livable. How should we feel about $13.22 an hour for schools?
So for CMS, that's phase one. They propose $13.22 an hour. Their goal is to get everybody up to $15 an hour. But they wanted to do it in phases because if you jumped everybody up to $15 an hour at one time, it creates what we call compression issues. So you've got, when you look at sort of the level of people above that, the salary gets compressed between those two levels of employees. And so they need to be able to look at it across the board, not just raising the lowest paid employees. So this is really phase one of their plan to increase everybody's salary to $15 an hour.
So they're aiming for 15. The city says 16 is the minimum, is the floor on a livable wage.
So we, with our budget, we are proposing a 5.5% increase for all of our employees, which will bring our minimum up to $15.85 an hour. Bank of America just increased their minimum salary to $20 an hour. So I think, you know, this continues to be a moving target, and we'll have to continue to evaluate what we think makes the most sense and what really is truly a livable wage in Charlotte-Mecklenburg.
Can we afford a livable wage? Will taxpayers stand for it? Because this means money from property taxes.
It certainly does, and that's part of what the future conversations will be about is, you know, what can we accomplish while trying to keep the tax rate, what I would say is relatively stable.
So County Commissioner Pat Cotham says she anticipates the budget will draw criticism because of the $50 million earmarked for schools, because that's $20 million short of the $70 million the schools requested. The school budget is never, I don't believe it's ever in the time that I've been here been fully funded to the amount that they have requested. And we are now having teachers who are just now, I believe, getting back to something resembling equitable wages since the Great Recession, and they're still having to use their own money to buy supplies and things like that for classrooms and for their kids. Why isn't funding for CMS more closely aligned with their requests?
So I think it's a couple of things. One is, you know, the state of North Carolina is the primary funder of education in the state of North Carolina. And so we are always trying to encourage the state to do more as it relates to education funding. And when you look at what we do locally, it's, again, we try to strike a balance between what we can afford to provide to the schools plus what we need to do to provide essential county services. And so, you know, every year we sit down and we have these conversations, and it's really about striking the right balance so that we can do as much as we can with the resources that we have. So clearly, if we wanted to give CMS additional dollars, you know, you could raise the tax rate another penny and you'd get them to 68. Mm-hmm. You know, we chose not to do that because we believe that the property tax increase that we proposed was as much as we felt good about doing, in light of the fact that we did have increases in values and people were going to be impacted by that. Mm-hmm. So again, trying to do as much as we could and try to keep the tax rate relatively stable.
So $50 million is earmarked for CMS. You're also proposing $41.8 million for Central Piedmont Community College. That's a $1 million increase over this year. What's that money for?
That's primarily for maintenance, maintaining the facilities at Central Piedmont Community College, as well as some staffing as well, locally funded staffing.
So it does go to some salaries, correct?
Locally funded positions, yes.
And those would be what kinds of positions?
Like your janitorial staff, as well as facility maintenance employees as well.
What about instructors?
The instructors are primarily the responsibility of the state of North Carolina.
Okay. $534 million for CMS is separate. Is the $534 million, let's go back. I'm confused. I get confused with numbers. The $534 million for CMS, I believe, is separate from the additional $36.9 million into pre-K and early childhood education funding, correct?
That's correct.
$14 million of that would be helped to clear the child care wait list. What is that?
So we have a program here for child care subsidy. So for children, we're focused on children age birth to five whose parents are working, who meet certain income thresholds, qualify to get a subsidy so that their children can attend a four or five star child care center so that they can work. There's not been sufficient funding to be able to serve all the children who are on the waiting list. Mm-hmm. So this locally funded program will allow us to make sure that we're going to do our best to try to clear the waiting list of those children who are waiting for child care subsidy.
And what kind of a dent will $14 million put in that? I have 10 seconds.
It should clear most of it. We're thinking about 1,500 kids will be served, and that would clear the vast majority of the waiting list.
Okay. Dina DiOrio is the county manager. Michael Bryant's here. He's the management and budget director for Mecklenburg County. We will continue our conversation in a moment at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're sitting here with Dina DiOrio, the county manager, and Michael Bryant, the management and budget director for Mecklenburg County, talking about the proposed budget, which will be voted on next month by county commission, and for which there is a slight increase in your property taxes, depending upon your point of view. So one of the other things that the county provides are social services. It's the second largest target of funding, I believe. The Department of Social Services is, $1.2 million. That's another increase, $4.7 million over this year. How's that money being spent?
There's a couple of investments regarding social services. The first one is $153,000 to expand the service of providing homebound meals for seniors. We expect that will provide funding for an additional 200 seniors to be served. Also, $312,000 for kinship care for children that are in foster care to be placed with relatives as opposed to foster parents, as well as $340,000 to expand investments in foster care programming as well.
We're living in this growing, thriving city and in the national economy that seems to be thriving as well. Are these needs increasing, staying the same, decreasing?
They're increasing.
They're increasing despite
based on need in Mecklenburg County.
How do you explain that?
That's a tough question. I mean, there's a lot of social issues that families are dealing with in today's world, and we're seeing an increase in health and human services overall, not just in foster care, but affordable housing and things like that. But we're certainly seeing an increase in that population.
And what drives the this is slightly off the budget, and you may not know the answer to this question. What drives a rising need for foster care? Is it strictly economic, or is there something else?
One of the things that we're seeing is the children that come into our custody have much higher needs than we've seen in the past, particularly older children.
Meaning
they need higher levels of therapeutic care. and that costs more money.
Because they've been through what?
Because they've just been, they've had tough times. Okay. You know, they have been through a lot of trauma and other things that make them require a higher level of care than we've seen in the past. And so we struggle with that quite a bit.
Is this happening around the country, or is this particular to Charlotte?
I think it's happening around the country. We've heard it from other places as well.
You're proposing $83.7 million for public health funding. That's, I think, $4.5 million more than last year. The biggest jump, $725,000 for six additional senior environmental health specialists. What do they do?
That's correct. That is for pool inspections as well as restaurant inspections as well. In addition to that,
there's... Oh, so when you're talking about senior environmental health people, you're not talking about people who help seniors. You're talking about their level of expertise.
Yes, that's the job classification, senior environmental.
So they go around and check restaurants for being healthy and pools for being...
As well as pools, that's correct.
Okay. $424,000 is voted to the expansion of PrEP usage and awareness. That's the HIV drug for those trying to prevent contact or contracting the disease.
Correct.
You're also using some of that money to sustain HIV and STI testing in non-traditional locations, such as?
I believe it's like the non-traditional health clinic locations. We want to expand it beyond where individuals typically go to receive this type of screening at health clinics. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at non-traditional locations.
It's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that we have a big problem in Mecklenburg County with sexually transmitted disease. Is that right?
That's correct.
Do we understand why?
Well, I'm not sure we understand why, but we know that our rate of new cases of HIV in Mecklenburg County is higher than in the state, and we are aware of that, and we're trying to put together strategies that we think can stem that from getting worse.
Hence the push into non-traditional locations.
And the PrEP.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You're investing $4.4 million dollars in mental health support funding. That's more than $7 million than last year. Why the increase in need?
So the big part of that is part of CMS's request. It's $5.7 million to add additional social workers, psychologists, and counselors at CMS, and we've been working with them over the last few years to try to build those numbers back up. We're also increases in therapeutic foster care, which we just talked about, and also two full-time social workers to provide screenings for adverse childhood experiences in public health clinics. And this is, you know, if you can intervene early on in life, you prevent some of the things that we see as kids get older. And so this is sort of more of a preventive way to sort of see if we can't try to identify that trauma early on in a child's life.
Here's where things start to get a little confusing. Parks and greenways. The county runs the parks. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. But the city came up $77 million short, although that number is in dispute now, for the cross-country trail, the Cross-Charlotte Trail. And their new budget, the city's new budget, sets aside $54 million to help make up for that loss. $54 million. Your entire budget for the parks is $51.2 million. Why are both the city and the county spending money on the park? That's $100-plus million.
So the Cross Charlotte Trail is a project that the city took on and went to the voters for funding some number of years ago, but they don't provide any operating dollars for park and recreation. So our $51 million is totally to run and operate all of the parks, greenways, and recreation centers and nature preserves that we have in the county. So that does not include the capital dollars that we invest in our park infrastructure every year.
So the $54 million from the city for the Cross Charlotte Trail is to build it.
Correct.
Once it's built, you maintain it and you run it.
Will. I guess. I don't know what's ever had that conversation
we'll
with you.
Are you serious? We're this far down the road and no one's ever had
that conversation. I'm sure somebody's had this conversation about who's going to run and who's going to run and maintain it, but no one's had that conversation with me.
Okay. Mecklenburg County is, by all measures that I've read, underparked for its population. We don't have enough parks to go around. Will this budget that sets aside $51.2 million do anything to solve that problem? Or is this strictly operating?
This is strictly operating, but one of the things that we are doing is we're accelerating $30 million in our capital plan to complete construction of 30 miles of greenway by 2023, mm-hmm. which was a request that we received from the park advocates. The We are still finishing up our 2008 bond projects, which will include some additional recreation centers and park renovations and some new parks as well. Our next capital plan will be when we look at trying to expand the amount of parkland that we have. When you talk about that, that's one of the feedback that we've been getting when it comes to the park budget, is that we didn't do enough around park land acquisition. So basically land banking for future park needs. That is not included in this budget, but it has come up as something that is of interest to folks in the community as well as to the board.
Because the UNC Charlotte Urban Institute put out a little article about this budget for parks, saying its headline, Mecklenburg Parks' Big Budget Boost Isn't All It's Cracked Up to Be. And it's written by Ruth Ann Grissom. She writes, at first glance, the proposed 2020 budget for Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation looks like a slam dunk, $51 million total. But it's a $13 million increase. The fans go nuts, a play designed for the highlight reel. But with the clarity of a slow-mo replay, however, stripped of its glitter and pizzazz, the move becomes just a mediocre lineup. First, she says, the proposed $51 million budget shouldn't be compared to the $44 million pre-recession budget, as the county has done. The fiscal 2020 budget includes one-time expenditures for line items that weren't included in the fiscal 2009 budget, such as $4.5 million for deferred maintenance and equipment and $325,000 for a new master plan. I could read more, but I won't. How do you respond to that?
Well, back in pre-recession days, the deferred maintenance money was not in the park and rec budget, but it was part of our capital reserve budget. So even though it wasn't included in the park budget, we did provide it. But now we actually provide it directly to park and rec in their budget. So Ms. Grissom needs to go back and do a little bit more research in terms of how we manage deferred maintenance back before the recession.
Okay. I should point out that Ruth Grissom, her article is an opinion piece. She's an op-ed writer in the Urban Institute's publication, so she doesn't work for them. It was reported that County Commission Chairman George Dunlap pumped his fist in celebration of your proposal to spend $3.3 million to establish a small business microloan fund. Why is the county getting involved in lending money?
This has been an interest of Commissioner Dunlap's for some time, and we hear a lot from small businesses that want to expand their business, that the amount of money that they want to borrow is not large enough that they can get it from a traditional bank, and there's really no other place where they can access capital. And so this is an important area, because those are the kind of companies that actually employ people, they create jobs, and if they can access those small amounts of capital, they can actually have a pretty good impact on the local economy. And so nobody's doing it. And so one of the things that we like to do is, you know, if there's a gap and we've identified a gap, and no one else is going to step in and fill the gap, then Mecklenburg County is prepared to do that. That's what we've done here.
Do other municipalities or counties do this?
There are some. I know there's one, I want to say Greenville, North Carolina. I think they may have a program, or that county out there there's a program out there. So it's not widespread, but there are some folks that are doing it, and we're researching it very carefully and making sure we know exactly what we're doing before we get into it. But we think that there's a lot of value in being able to provide folks access to that kind of capital.
How big would these loans be on average? Do you know? Have you thought about it?
It would be fairly small. I would say that well under $50,000.
Wow. And do you know from other locations that involve themselves in this what the payback rate is?
I don't, but that's something that we're analyzing.
Would there be an interest rate attached to this? Would people be paying for this money?
They would be paying for the money, but it would be below market interest rate.
And the payback terms, the term of the
loan?
Be
comparable to a bank.
To a bank. Don't these things usually come from private investors and entrepreneurs and not municipalities?
Well, you know, again, we don't see that there's anybody in Charlotte-Mecklenburg that is stepping in and filling the gap. And so if that were the case, we wouldn't be doing it.
So one of the goals of the county is to reduce racial disparities. Is this a program that's in that little bag of goodies?
It is, actually, because these are the folks that, you know, they're primarily owned by, African-American companies or Latino companies. And so we believe this is the opportunity for them to be able to access that capital to be able to expand their businesses.
What other ways are you looking at to reduce racial disparity? Because one of the things that we have in this county and in this city is this lack of upward social mobility, which is the result of hundreds of years of discrimination and redlining and all kinds of practices that deliberately kept people down and made them unable to build wealth. So this is a way to address some of this. What else are you doing?
There's a couple other things. One is we're actually doing an assessment of our own minority women small business enterprise program internal to the county to make sure that minority contractors have the ability to compete for contracts, for county contracts. We're also expanding our Arts and Science Council program called Culture Blocks, which brings cultural activities out into communities, into recreation centers, into libraries. It's been very successful, and we've got a lot of inquiries about expanding that, so this will do that. And we're also purchasing a mobile library that will bring library materials into communities that don't have libraries at them now, mm-hmm. So being able to make sure people have access to library materials that they wouldn't have otherwise.
We don't have bookmobiles?
We do not have a bookmobile. This would be a bookmobile.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't we used to? Or did they stop
sure
that with the downturn?
They might have, but
all
we don't have a bookmobile now.
At a recent public hearing, speakers from Smithville, which is a small little area near Cornelius, asked for $3 million in this year's budget to buy about 16 acres of vacant land to begin affordable housing redevelopment. This is an area founded by former slaves. We had some of them on the program. It went for decades without basic services like water and sewer, and every time they asked, they were declined that opportunity up until a point. They finally were able to break through. What's the chance that you'll be able to fulfill that request?
So my budget has in it $250,000 for Smithville for technical assistance. They have prepared a revitalization plan, and I have had conversations with the town of Cornelius about this, and what they've indicated to me is that there's not consensus among everybody in Smithville about what the right strategy is. And so the $250,000 is designed to provide technical assistance to everybody in Smithville to come up with a strategy that everybody can agree to. And if that means that everybody agrees at some point to this $3 million, then we would certainly bring that back to the board for consideration. They've done a tremendous job of organizing themselves. We want to help them, but we want to make sure that we make the right investments and we have the intended outcomes that everybody wants.
I'm going to go back to affordable housing for just a second. Francis on Twitter writes, why doesn't Mecklenburg County do some type of homestead tax exemption where they hold taxes steady for anyone of a certain age and or length of residency in a particular home? That would allow seniors to age in place. Once the owner sells, the tax value would be reassessed. Many states have this to protect seniors and those on fixed incomes.
So we do have what we call a circuit breaker program, which is one of the programs that seniors or any seniors basically can apply for through the assessor's office. One of the things that people need to keep in mind is that all of those tax relief programs need to be approved by the General Assembly, mm-hmm. and we do not have the ability to implement tax relief programs at the local level.
Okay. If people aren't sure what their new valuation looks like, they have no clue how much more their property has increased, how do they find out?
They can go to our website, www.mecnc.gov, and go to the assessor's page, and they will be able to log in there, and they'll be able to find out what their value
is. So you take that new value that you see at that website, and you multiply it times 0.00965, right? And that gives you the
6169.
Give me the number,
6169.
See, I'm no good at numbers. 6169. Really? You multiply the value that you see on the website by 006169?
6169.
0.006169. Yes, right. And that gives you your county tax?
The county tax rate.
Bills.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you can appeal this until Monday.
Monday.
Where? How? Quick.
Just go to the assessor's office. You can file an appeal online, or you can go there in person at the Valerie C. Woodard Center on Freedom Drive.
And are you still holding public hearings on this budget?
We are not.
You're not. So the commission will vote on this next month. Dina DiOrio is the county manager for Mecklenburg County. Michael Bryant, management and budget director for Mecklenburg County. Thank you both for the hour.
Thank you for having us.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.